Soccer.
Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, soccer, my bad.
Yeah.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
My name is... My name is
Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
Sir Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we coming with it. Happy Father's Day.
Yes, sir. All the dads out there.
Yeah. So y'all got a new pair of drawers, some Old Spice.
Some socks. You got one more hour to enjoy it. Probably a messed up tie.
Y'all got one more hour to enjoy it. And light up ties.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Sorry. Somebody's caught the show.
Oh, man. I don't even know if that's okay to mention that because of all the challenges.
I see y'all out there, Dad.
Man.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. That's what sucks, man. You know, you think about some classic dads, you know, the classic, you know, TV dads, and then you got the off-the-cuff dads, man, just, you know, from, like, Bud Bundy's to, like, you know, cause, I mean, it's nuts, man. So, anyway, a lot of love. Gentlemen, happy Father's Day again, like we've reiterated on the special, obviously, Father's Day edition of Talking Sports with the 12th man. This is what we do. We got a lot of things to talk about. Let's get this party started. Let me connect with my fellas. JQ, how are you feeling this evening? I love the picture, too, of the girls, man. Great shot, by the way, man. But happy Father's Day, man. How you feeling this evening, sir?
Oh, man, I appreciate you. Yeah, I had to put one up where I can get all the generations connected with me and my dad, and then, you know, with me and my girls, and then the other one. I'm feeling good, man. I've had a good day. You know, the family's taking care of me. Gave me we went to get some seafood, you know. Got a little Cajun boil in there earlier today, and my homeboy, nice. Big Mike, you know, went out and played a little golf and, you know, chilled out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've had a nice, long, full day, and I'm ready to talk some sports with y'all, man. How you doing?
That's what's up, man. Yeah, I'm doing fantastic. I'll give you my rundown as well. Let me check in with my other father, Mr. Rob Ford. How are you feeling, man? I love seeing, obviously, shots of you and the fam, man, as always, man. What's going on?
Man, everything's rocking and rolling, man. Ready to talk some sports. They got that traditional nap in before the show. Take me a little minute to wake up, and I'm ready.
Mm-hmm. I'm just happy that you woke up, man. That's half the battle right there, man. We ain't going to make fun of you too much, man. I had a pretty chill
day.
Yeah,
that Marriott burger.
Said, he didn't get too much of the itis right. At least he woke up, man. So we'll give him some props for that, man. I had a pretty good day, man. Like I said, been had a chance to catch a movie, obviously. Want to show some love. As we always do, and like I said, not a dad that I know of yet, man. Besides, I got, you know, furry dads, man. You know, so it's all good, man. So, yeah, a lot of love. So, let's get this party started here. As always, calling the show, the 424-243-9519 number is always ready, and follow us on Twitter at the number 12 THMAN Sports. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/talkingsports with 12th man, or 12-man sports as well. So, gentlemen, let's go ahead and get this party started. We've got a lot of things to talk about. The draft is coming around the corner. But, again, let's talk about topics that we are always continually texting about and all the fun stuff, too. We're talking about super teams and all that fun stuff. And I guess we'll start off with comparing the two squads here, and I'll let Rob kick us off, comparing LeBron and Durant on joining their loaded teams. Well, so go ahead, Rob, start us off. Take it to JQ as always.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I think when you look at it here, and I know we talked about this a little bit over the week in our little group chat, and the difference between the LeBron James when he joined the Miami Heat, and then when Kevin Durant when he joined, obviously, the Golden State Warriors. And obviously, the big difference is at that time, LeBron James was having trouble beating the Boston Celtics. And so he tried to put together a team, obviously, that will propel him past the Boston Celtics as well as win NBA championships. Obviously, every year when he was with the Miami Heat, he made it to the NBA Finals in all four of those seasons. So they were able to beat the Boston Celtics, and he won two championships in those four seasons. So Obviously, I'm sure he would have wanted to win four championships in those 4 years, but he did win two, so that was semi-successful in beating his nemesis, which ultimately was to beat the Boston Celtics. In Kevin Durant's case, obviously, he was with the OKC, and they lost to the Golden State Warriors in seven games, and he actually joined a team that he couldn't beat, as opposed to putting together a team to beat the team he couldn't beat. So I think ultimately that's the biggest difference when you compare the two, when as far as you know, joining the super teams. And like I said, in LeBron's case, he tried to put together a team to beat his nemesis. In Kevin Durant's case, he just joined his nemesis.
He will get Dre triggered again. Yeah. But, you know, I agree. And like we were talking about on the group text, it's the subtle differences of it. LeBron forming that team in Miami was to become that 70-plus win team that Golden State already was before Kevin Durant joined. And I think that's the slight difference when you talk about that is, yeah, he formed a super team, and there's no doubt about that. But they were trying to get to that plateau. He didn't join Miami where they were already a 70-plus win team. You have Kevin Durant joining Golden State where they were already a 73-win team, you know, the best regular season record ever in the NBA. So, I mean, that's part of the reason why Kevin Durant got some of that. And I still feel like he gets some, but not to the point, to the level I feel like, you know, LeBron still gets the hate about it. But that, to me, that's the difference, is that he joined a ready-made team where LeBron and Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade had to kind of come together. And you notice, I believe that first season, they went like 9-8, and everybody was talking about how the sky was falling those first 17 games, about why they weren't, you know, just killing people right off the rip. And you talk about a lot, Dre, in terms of chemistry. And Durant also has to, you know, get himself into that Golden State culture in that locker room and get that chemistry. But yeah, to me, it's just like apples and oranges kind of conversation of what you're doing. Yeah, you're getting good players together in terms of Miami, what they did. But joining that Golden State team for Durant, you know, just took them, you know, just throw that, you know, it's like a softball. You just throw it in the air and just, you know, batting practice, just hitting out the right field, you know, for them to catch. Like, it was just so, it just took a team that was already really good and just threw them into the stratosphere. And I'm not mad at him. Like, he's earned that right, you know. You can hate on it, but he's earned that right to do that. You can say, that team, he couldn't beat the team, so he joined them. And you're always going to have that piece of it. But you become a free agent, you have that right to do that. But to me, that's the difference between the two. But, you know, props to him. He's got two titles, got two finals MVPs. I mean, he has been the difference to put them back over the hump against Cleveland, where Cleveland was starting to give Golden State a little bit of a, can we beat them, when Kyrie was still there. And now you have Kevin Durant just an assassin killing them in the playoffs. And he got what he wanted. So, you know, hats off to him.
All I will say in the back and forth is that the team that won 73 games, yeah, that was one squad. But whenever Kevin Durant joined, it wasn't the same squad. And what I mean by that was, by joining the team, they had to get rid of a lot of players. So, yes, they won 73, but whenever he joined, that bench was conceivably different. They lost
a lot
of people. They lost Harrison Barnes. They lost a lot of teams. They lost, it was a different team.
Did you?
It was a different team.
They lost Harrison Barnes and Andrew Bogut. Stop it.
They lost more than that. Hold on.
If people really remember those players in the league.
I will pull this up because literally that's the biggest thing. Their bench was considerably different. It was considerably different. You know,
no,
so,
they had Iguodala,
yes,
and they had Livingston.
Yes,
they lost Bogut,
yeah,
and they lost Harrison Barnes.
They had two of those. I'm pulling up right now because, again, this is what we're talking about before, too, because we're going to pull this up, too. We're talking about this, too. And
I'm
pulling this up, too. Okay, fair. I mean, like I said, I know you act like it's like they had like this. It was a different squad, too, as well, too. So, you know, whole thing we talk about, you know, as far as joining and creating squads and little things like that, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and act like, because everyone's going to have their opinion as far as whatever happened, as far as this and that, joining squads and everything like that, too. But I'm going to pull this up, and we're going to talk about the next topic here, because I don't want to sit here and take too much time here. But let's talk about it. So did LeBron, did the trend start? Did he start that trend or what? I mean, so let's go with that, and I'll let you kick that off, JQ, as far as that.
I don't. I feel like we always get a lot of – we get caught in the moment of now, and we get into the revisionist history kind of piece of it. He might have started in the new NBA era, but are we talking about, you know, Shaq going to Boston and Phoenix trying to chase the title? You talk about Charles Barkley going to Houston with Scottie Pippen trying to get a title. You talk about Karl Malone and Gary Payton going to the Lakers. Like, that's, to me, that's not necessarily a new thing of veterans and all-star players and great players, really, in this league going somewhere and trying to formulate a super team to get a title. I mean, that has happened before he did that. It was just that I think he brought it back in vogue for some of these younger people that may not remember when those other things happened for some of these guys that are our age, you know what I mean? You don't sort of remember it, and it kind of dies down, and then he brings it back up, and it's like, oh, well, he brought it back. He's the first one to do it. And it's like, no, he didn't. We just didn't call them super teams. You're talking about Gary Payton and Sean Kemp. Excuse me. I'm talking about a Stockton and Malone. I'm talking about a Barkley and a Marley and a KJ. I mean, you're talking about a Clyde Drexler and a Port. I mean, there have been strong teams throughout the history of the league. You know, the Lakers with Magic and Kareem and Worthy, the Celtics with Bird and McHale and Parrish and Ainge and all of them. Like, there have been really, really strong teams throughout the history of the NBA. So to me, to say that he did that and he's the first one to do it, it's like, no, I think he kind of brought it back to the forefront. But if you go back and look through the annals of the history of the NBA, like, there have been super teams, quote-unquote, and really strong teams that you could call a super team that we just didn't call them that back in the day. It was just – that was our norm. That was just a team. That's just the way things were done. But now that they went to the not one, not two, not three kind of thing, it's like, oh, he brought super teams in. It's like, that's – to me, that's not necessarily the truth. I just feel like the people that want to hate on LeBron are going to hate LeBron. They're going to put any tag to him to hate on him. But I don't think he was the first person to introduce super teams. They've been around for a while. I'm sorry, I inhaled the wrong pipe. It made me cough. I'm sorry, y'all.
Yeah, it's all good. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, JQ. And I think the reason why, as you mentioned, I think the reason why a lot of people thought LeBron is the one who started this is because of the national televised event with him taking his talents to Miami. We never saw a player that did it in that manner. But let's face it, LeBron James has been a talk of the NBA since high school. And, I mean, whether we like it or not, even after losing the championship, I mean, you can't turn on sports talk radio or any sports television show right now without them talking about LeBron James. He's still the talk of the sports world, and for whatever reason, that's just what the media is into, and obviously, you know, ESPN has something to do with that, that taking his talent to South Beach thing, and they capitalized off of it. But let's face it, I mean, they were televising LeBron James basketball games when he was in high school, and so the hype has just surrounded him for so long, and I think that's why so many people have this love or hate relationship with LeBron James, just because he's just been that figure. He's like the Yankees in baseball. He's like the Cowboys in football. He's just that figure that you're either going to love or hate. And I think that's, you know, with the modern-day area of basketball, just thinks, you know, as far as this topic is concerned. But, yeah, this has been going on for a long time. You look at the 60s with the Boston Celtics, Jerry West, the Wilt Chamberlain teams on the Lakers. The NBA has had super teams ever since the NBA started. You can even go back to the 50s with the Minneapolis Lakers and George Mikan and those teams. That's just the way the NBA has always been structured. They've always had super teams. Even Bill Walton in the 80s, it was kind of almost at the tail end of his all-star NBA career, but he went and joined the Celtics and helped them win more championships. It's always been that way. The Detroit Pistons went out and acquired Mark Aguirre to join Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars and Bill Laimbeer to get them over the hump. It's always been that way. The Bulls went out and got Dennis Rodman to help them to to get three more titles there in the 90s. It's just the way the NBA has always been structured.
Yep. Always.
Yep. So what are we saying? So we're saying that there have always been players that are trying to like make themselves better by acquiring good talent and trying to crush other teams, like we talked about from the Celtics to the freaking Lakers back in the day, 76ers, even though it didn't go as far, but, you know, Rockets, everyone tried to acquire talent and everything like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's been going on for a minute, obviously. So, you know.
We get caught up in the moment and now. It's what it is.
Yeah.
You get caught up in it now. We are a very now generation. This is the greatest thing I've seen in all time. I've never seen this before. You know what I mean? Like, whenever you see it, it's got to be the best or the worst thing you've ever seen in life. And it's like, no, it's not. Like, I mean, maybe in the past 7 days it might be, but not the best or greatest things you've ever seen in life or the worst thing you've ever seen in life. Like, come on now. Let's have some perspective. And I think that's what we lack is perspective of it. We talked about it. Look at Carmelo and Gary Payton. Like, that didn't happen. They went to the Lakers with Shaq and Kobe towards the end of their careers, trying to form a super team, and they got beat by a blue-collar team in the Pistons, but they tried it, you know what I mean? We talk about Barkley, we talk about Pippen going to Houston.
Drexler.
Like, these things happen.
Yeah,
these things happen. Like, they've happened for a long time. It's just that, you know, I think sometimes we get a kind of age divide and a social divide in terms of things pre- and post-social media, where before social media didn't happen, after social media it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, and we got to get beyond that. Like, I agree with you, Rob. This has happened since forever, and we got to get beyond that. Stop trying to pin so much on somebody that you just don't like and say that he's ruined the NBA and ruined all these other things. Like, that's not what happened. Dudes have been doing this just before him, and guess what? They're going to do this after he's gone. It's just the nature of the beast. Dudes is trying to get rings. They're trying to win. They're going to try to go where the greatest collection of talent is to make that happen. You talk about the NHL. I remember Ray Bourque, who never won anything, but he went to the Avalanche and he won a title. That's what you do. The guys do that. They get a little money, and they don't have to make as much on the contract, and they're just trying to get a ring, and they still have talent. They're going to go to the greatest collection of talent they feel like they can fit into and win a championship. It happens across all sports. It's not going to stop.
Yeah, that's the thing, too, that I was talking about, too, because even we were talking about that last week as far as dynasties, and I had this pretty long, pretty speech going on, but I'm just going to let it kind of evolve for tonight because, again, you know, you have – dynasties are good because they kind of set the stage, right? Because, again, you've got the Yankees, Patriots. I mean, anytime you got a dynasty, they're the team to beat, right? They're like, man, we got to beat these guys because they are – I mean, first it talks about – you kind of switch from being the hero to, like, the man, the being the hated again because – that's just you're the target. But, again, you give them credit because, you know, you're not a Yankees fan because they're the Yankees. You're a Yankees fan because, hey, you know, they're just always winning, right? So even if you're across the bow, if you're a Red Sox, you may be like, man, I hate that team. But somewhere you're like, man, it'd be cool to join up with them. And that's happened before. You've had Johnny Damon go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there's numbers of people that have, you know, there's crossed the line, if you will, and just to a hated rival. But there's something about that team that they've been attracted to because – they're winning, right? So for whatever reason it is, that happens so much. I mean, case in point, the Patriots. I mean, everyone, it's that love-hate. If you're a Patriots fan, you're all about it. If you're not a Patriots fan, you hate them. You hate them because you're like, either they're so good or there's something about them or whatever. But that happens
in all
sports, too. Yeah, so it's like, you know, so,
like you
know,
said.
Whatever comes across. Yeah, so again, I think that's the biggest thing to take from all of this is the fact that, I mean, there's two sides of both coins, and one side, like you talked about, is like, you know, the hate side, and the other side is like the admiration, too, because, you know, and I think it is good for sports, too, because, again, it allows everyone in that sport to kind of elevate their game to try to, like, knock them off the pedestal. Like, man, I beat the best because they've been the best for such a long time. And, you know, and if you're on the top, you're like, hey, come get me, you know what I'm saying? Come knock me off the post, too. So good call that. Do you have anything to add to that, Rob?
Well, I'll just, you know, make another comment here. Scottie Pippen, after Michael Jordan and after the Bulls championships, I don't know if you guys recall this, but Pippen tried his best to win championships without Michael Jordan. He went to Portland and tried to form an all-star team there, and which I thought was one of the most talented teams that ever won an NBA title was that Portland Trailblazer team that Pippen joined in Portland. And then he tried it with the Houston Rockets. And so he desperately wanted to win the NBA title without Michael Jordan. He was desperately trying to win a title outside of Jordan's shadow. And I know they took the Lakers to 7 games in 2000. And, I mean, that was their best chance. But, I mean, the Kobe, the Shaq, alley hoop. And but you know he desperately tried to win the NBA title after his Michael Jordan days, And he talked about Charles Barkley leaving Philly to go join Phoenix and put together an all-star team. Then he went to Houston, tried to join an all-star team. So it hasn't always been successful for some players. And but, you know, it definitely has happened for quite some time.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, like I said, so, I mean, I know we're kind of talking a couple topics here as far as, you know, because at the end of the day, because you don't join those teams if you're not trying to win a championship. Because, again, I mean, after all the accolades, after all the all-star teams, I mean, at the end, that's what you're chasing. I think everyone in their right mind is definitely, you know, Dan Marino, one of the greatest quarterbacks, he didn't have a Super Bowl. I mean, that's probably non at him, you know, at some point. You know, same thing for, you know, Jim Kelly, bless his heart, you know, I mean, poor thing, you know, he went to four of them, you know. Never got one. So, again, it's just one of those things where, for whatever reason, that's kind of why you are in it, if you will, to try to get that. And then, yeah, you can, again, the game can, you can meet a lot of, you know, have an impact in life and a little things like that. But I think that is definitely the ultimate goal for anything, is to definitely win a championship too. And like I said, I think you've heard some topics about LeBron and, you know, saying that, you know, even if he doesn't win, he's already, you know, Shaq, and Shaq made a comment as far as even if LeBron doesn't win any more championships, he's still done some great things, and I agree with that statement. LeBron is still a great player and has done a lot of things for the game too. So again, even if he never wins another championship, his legacy is already set. Now maybe that's him like, hey, I want to get a couple more, and we'll talk about that because I think he has capability. We'll talk about some options that are happening if you hear the news as far as some things about Kawhi, and we'll talk about that too as well. But I don't know if you guys would have any, if you want to add anything about championships, and then we'll kind of talk about Greg Popovich and Kawhi and kind of how that next phase is going to happen with LeBron and possibly the Lakers, and we'll talk about that too. So anything to add on that, JQ?
No, that's good.
Oh, go ahead, JQ. I'm sorry.
I was going to go ahead. But, I mean, yeah, you go ahead about Shaq and LeBron. I'll follow on.
Well, I was just going to say, to some degree, what Shaq is saying about LeBron is correct. You know, he's a Hall of Famer already. I mean, I think I've lost track how many finals he's been to. I want to say nine NBA finals, even though he's only got three championships. LeBron James is at worst the second best player in NBA history. And so obviously, at worst he's going to end his career at this stage the second best player in NBA history. So, I mean, that's not a slouch. But obviously, LeBron he desperately wants to go down as the best player in NBA history. And I think to some degree, I think that has been his focus, has been a detriment to him. And I think what Shaq is trying to say, hey, go out and play the game, and some of those things will probably come to you. And I think, you know, LeBron's focus, he's been so focused on trying to be the best player in NBA history, I think to some degree it's came back to be a detriment to him as well. And but you know, so I partially agree with Shaq, and then there's a part of me where I disagree with him as well. But you know, we'll get into the Lakers aspect too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and again, I agree with that. I feel what Shaq is saying. I feel like that's almost coming from somebody that played with him when LeBron was younger, and trying to give him like a lifeline, kind of a big brother in the game, legend to another, said, hey man, I'm trying to take this burden off of you by letting everybody know that how I feel about you. You're already a legend. You don't have to press the issue so much. Yeah, you're going to ultimately be judged on championships because that's the life we live right now in terms of that. But dude, you're already there. Just go out there, like you said, and play the game and play it for the love and just do what you're good at and let the chips fall where they may. You're pressing them. I mean, you keep talking about chasing the ghosts and this, that, and the other. There are some people that no matter what you do, you'll never be Michael Jordan, and you just got to let that go. And you got to be content with what you're doing. Hell, Jerry West is the freaking logo. How many finals did he lose to the Celtics? He's got one title.
Yeah.
I think Jerry West lost like seven or eight. He lost like six, I think, championship series to the Celtics, just the Celtics. You know what I mean? And hated rivalry. But he's still the logo. And he's still revered as one of the best basketball minds and one of the best players. He's the freaking logo. Like, you know, like you can still be you with, like you said, Rob, without just sort of chasing and having that be your focal point, your seminal moment of trying to get past him. You got to understand that no matter what you do, even right now, even some years before, even if you had it got to 6 or 7, you still would never have been better than Michael Jordan in some people's minds. So that piece you kind of have to make peace with and let go and just play your basketball game and do it for you. So a piece of me appreciates what Shaq was trying to do for him, but I hear you. I mean, I don't want him to stop, if you were talking about LeBron, stop striving for that. But you got to find a better balance of not letting it be your defining moment and everything else is a failure, and still say, you know, what he's doing in this league is crazy. His numbers are going to be all top 1, 2, or 3 in so many categories. It's like, dude, you're already a legend. It's already defined. You're going to be that guy in that conversation. But, you know, you just can't let it all be about the title number in terms of how you're defined in terms of the annals of the NBA history and, you know, and the legacy piece of it. So I'm with you, Rob. There's a piece of it that I agree with. There's a piece of it I don't want to take that hunger away from LeBron, but I don't want him to have that be so focused where everything else is a failure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think most basketball purists, when you look at the challenges that LeBron James has had through his NBA career, things just did not set up for him the way Jordan was set up for Jordan. And when you look at it from the coaching standpoint, Michael Jordan had a great coach with consistency with Phil Jackson. He always had Scottie Pippen in the prime of his career. When Scottie was in the prime, Scottie was a top 5 player in the league. And so LeBron didn't have that luxury that LeBron had. And so he didn't have things set up for him as great as what Jordan had set up for him. And I think most basketball purists, outside of the haters, I think they can see that things were, when you look at the team that LeBron took to the finals, if you look at the Chicago Bulls 86 team, when Michael Jordan, you know, hit, what, 60-some points against the Celtics 63. In the playoffs?
Double overtime, 63.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, that team that Michael Jordan was on in 1986 was the equivalent of the team that LeBron James took to the NBA Finals for the very first time, practically. And all jokes aside, it's the truth. And I mean, that's just the difference. He just had not had the when you look at that team that LeBron took to the Finals, I mean, he had Mo Williams and I mean,
Danielle Marshall.
Yeah, Danielle Marshall. I mean, come on. And he beat a very good Pistons team and put up 40-something points in the clinching game in Detroit.
Yeah, he had 32 straight points, or 32 of the Cleveland's last points. Yeah, he was a house of fire. Yeah.
I mean, he was a one all-star team. And so you look at some of the teams that he's taken to the finals, even the first year he went to the Warriors. I mean, he didn't have Kyrie and Kevin Love, and he managed to win 2 games. Mm-hmm. Things have not just been set up perfectly for him the way it was for Jordan. And like I said, I think most pure basketball experts, they can see that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough because I think it's, anytime you talk about Jordan, I mean, I know he had a lot of consistency with that too. And it's tough because I don't know if, Jordan had his challenges too, going through a lot of squads like the Pistons and the Lakers and the Celtics. I mean, he earned that, man. He earned those 6 championships when he finally got there too. And I think it's kind of a different style whenever the Jordan rules and things that he had to go through. And this is not a knock on the statement too, but just definitely, I do wonder. LeBron's physically he's a grown man, clearly. You know, you do wonder how that would have played out if he was in an era too, as far as having certain squads, and then the era of free agency that we're in nowadays, as opposed to, would somebody like a Pippen want to sit there and, yeah, let's go LeBron? I mean, that's why he probably left to find that, you know, to go to Miami. Because, again, I don't know if anyone's playing Cleveland or just having the consistency or having that type of, you know, coach power to kind of say, hey, guys, you know, we're going to do this the right way too. And like I said, I'm not probably beating this in the dirt, man. Like I said, I'm telling you guys, somehow get the audiobook of The 11 Rings. Great, great book, man. Again, like I said, it just goes. I don't have any stock in it. I'm just telling you because, again, it's eye-opening to talk about the whole, you know, that maturation process and how everything is going too, because there's a lot of internal drama going with that squad. But then again, it was interesting to hear that perspective too, to actually be behind the scenes and say, you know, hey, you're going to run this offense. No, I'm not going to run. This is, you know, Jackson fighting Michael Jordan over the offense. And then once Jordan kind of realized that, okay, this is actually a good thing, you know, how it elevated their game too. But again, it takes the whole team kind of coming together and understanding, because, you know, Jordan, you know, he was a tough person to play with, you know, but then he realized, I need to change my leadership style. And that's kind of chemistry things that, again, you don't see because we're not in the locker room. You know, we're not in the locker room with, you know, the OKC or what happened with the Warriors, what happened with the Celtics. I mean, you know, again, Kevin, you know, Garnett and then Ray Allen and Ron, you know, Paul Pierce, that squad. I mean, little things that you don't know what's happening behind the scenes, but they're able to win. They're able to kind of channel that and create a dynamic squad too. So things happen, and there's a lot of things that happen that teams that are more talented lose because they don't have other ways to combat that too. So anyway, that's a little side note. And yeah, let's talk about this. Let's keep going. We've got 14 minutes left in the show here. We're keeping this going here. I want to get to the mic.
And just real quick, my comments is not to take away what Jordan and the Bulls did. Obviously, what Jordan and the Bulls did was incredible. Going 6-0 in the NBA Finals. I don't know if we can think of anybody that had that kind of dynasty and never lost in the finals either. And, right. I mean, the Spurs might have came close. I think they went to 6 finals, and they went 5-1. And obviously, so far, these Warriors are 3-1 in the NBA Finals. So, I mean, I don't know of any other dynasty that went undefeated in every year they went to finals. So my comments about LeBron James is not to take anything away from Jordan. My point was just that things were just not set up for LeBron the way it was set up for Jordan in Chicago.
I got you. And I was saying that, don't think it was like an easy cakewalk road to get to that stage. You know, everything that happened made him who he was as a player too. So you get beat up a couple of times, you go through those battles, those wars, and then that's whatever. Like I said again, you know, he had the freaking Jordan rule. You had a whole team that was designed. Every time this dude comes to the lane, we're gonna hit him. We're gonna pull him. Whatever. And if you know that I'm gonna get physically beat down, and yet you still go in the lane and take shots for your team, that's a different scenario as opposed to, you know, nowadays. I mean, it's not as physical. That's a fact. So all we're saying is fact. Everything that you go through, and then you realize the wars and battles, and now you say, all right, now I'm going to sit there, I'm going to take everything that's happened over getting beat for, like, you know, 6-7 years, and now you're the top. And like I said, yes, again, you're not taking anything from that, but just that process that you get to that stage is going to allow you to stay longer on the mountaintop. So anyway, it doesn't kill you, makes you stronger, as they say, too. So, yeah. Yeah. All right, cool. Speaking of the Spurs, what makes Greg Popovich a great coach, Rob?
Well, I think it all starts with communication first. Communication and motivation. I think it starts with those two elements before it even gets into the X's and O's element of the game. I'm sorry, what'd you say?
You see, you trying to throw some rhymes? Communication, motivation? Go ahead.
Talk to Rob quick.
You know, sorry. I got a little rap career in my background, man, so don't let me get going, man, you know. I think it starts with those two elements even before you get into the X's and O's. And sometimes it's the basic stuff. And when you listen to Greg Popovich break down the game, it all goes back to the basics with him. And it demonstrates confidence to his team. He has a very unique ability to demonstrate confidence with his players. And to going back to the little things and the basics. So I think, you know, he has that, and he has a unique ability of being able to bring players of all different backgrounds and culture and bring them together for one goal. So he's a guy that's a mender of personalities. He's able to bring them together and play together as one cohesive unit. And so in that regard, He's I actually think this year without Kawhi Leonard, he quietly did one of his better coaching jobs. He just didn't have the personnel on the floor this year as what he's used to having in the past. But I think quietly he did a phenomenal coaching job. And I think Steve Kerr is knocking on that door, you know, being one of the top coaches in the game. But I think still Rick Popovich is still a is the top coach in the NBA today, and it's for all of those reasons that we just mentioned.
Hold on,
yeah, you talk about Kerr.
Now, is Big Mike supposed to call in the show? Anything like that? Because do you know if he's supposed to call in or anything like that? Big Mike or anything or no?
No, I don't think so. Is somebody on the line?
I got a caller. Yeah, let's check in and let's see who this is. So stay tuned. Trigger's going to be quick. Here we go. Hello, caller. Welcome to Talking Sports with Tolfin. How you doing this evening?
Yeah, I'm good, man. What's going on with y'all?
Not too
much.
Thanks for checking in with us. So that's your name real quick, man.
Yeah, it's Naj.
Naj, what's going on?
Yeah, ain't much, man. Hearing y'all sing the praises of Popovich and then Steve Kerr. I didn't get sick yet, but if y'all kept going with Steve Kerr, I was going to get sick.
I don't like the word either, but I give credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. Give us your thoughts.
I just put it in these terms. If Derek Fisher goes to Golden State and Steve Kerr goes to New York, we're talking about those two guys in totally different ways. Coaching, I mean, it helps marginally, but more than anything, it's about talent in the NBA. If you send me to Sacramento, I'm not going to win. But if you send me somewhere where it's a franchise player and I can really put in my system and I have the juice and authority and kind of a 82-game personality, which is really important. Like, you can't have one of those personalities where you're not up and at them every day and, you know, conducting yourself. Because players are watching the same way, you know, with a teacher, where kids will watch you and see how you handle situations. So, Pop, he's all-time great. He won when things were slow and defensive-minded and games were ugly, and he's winning in the fast-paced era, too. So, Pop is one of those guys. But, man, he don't get Tim Duncan and David Robinson. I mean, do we really know his name? Maybe not. Huh. You know what I mean? Like, that's how important talent is in NBA coaching.
Come on, man. You know what? I agree with that 80% of the way. And this is the other 20% I'm talking about. We talk about Brad Stevens and his out-of-balance play calling for the Celtics, which is flat-out phenomenal. That is coaching. You just can't plug anybody into that situation and have them do that. And for what Rob talked about in terms of Popovich's understanding of the games and the X's and O's and the rudiments and the fundamentals of it, I will go to this. LaMarcus Aldridge was talking about getting traded, and he went to Pop, and Pop told him, if I can get LeBron James or Kevin Durant, I would drive you to the airport myself and trade you. But since I can't do that, I will make sure that I make this offense work better for you in this, and I'm going to change what I'm doing to make sure that you're more comfortable. And we didn't have Kawhi, and we still had a very successful season. That, to me, is a testament to Pop's coaching skills. That's why I was saying,
I hear what you're saying. I think LaMarcus is less X's and O's, more of some players don't like being hollered at, and they can't handle that. And LaMarcus seems to be one of those guys. Pop had a much more softer touch with him this year. He didn't come out screaming, ranting, and raving like he could do with Timmy, because Timmy would just brush it off. Wasn't a big deal.
Right,
that dude can go into a shell if you yell at him. So, I mean, that was just that
adjustment.
Like, it wasn't something he drew up.
But that's coaching, though, right? That's understanding your personnel and who you can push buttons on and who you can prod and who you have to coddle, right? Like, to me, that's part of the coaching,
Give him credit for it, if we're going to give him credit for it, then we got to mark him for it, too, because initially he didn't understand that about LaMarcus.
But LaMarcus is soft. And sometimes you got to recognize when somebody is soft. And it might take you a second. And agree.
Yeah.
I hear what you're saying, but he's soft. And sometimes, like you said, when you're having a Timmy or a David Robinson, you're used to having the dudes you can press and press and press. But it takes somebody to understand that I can't keep going that way and say it's my way or the highway. I got to take a step back. For this guy, I got to do this. For this guy, I can do something else. That, to me, is a hallmark of a good coach. It's the only thing I'm saying that I will give him credit for. Because you know, like I know, some dudes will say, whatever, you're just soft. Get off my team. I can't coach this dude. And that dude is out the door, and Pop had the power to do so.
He's an all-time great. I'm not knocking him. The Steve Kerr stuff is where I really get kind of irked by this. I thought Brad Stevens was scoring 10 points a game. You let the announcers tell it during the season. Like, it was getting ridiculous. I'm like, the coach worship out here. They also got two top five picks out there on the court at the same damn time. That kind of helps. But, Brad Stevens, bright young mind and everything. But it's just we go way too far. Dwayne Casey goes to Detroit. Is there any significant difference between him and Stan Van Gundy? I wouldn't say so.
No.
I think they're equally.
No. No, I'll give you that. My only thing is, but you can be a bad coach and you can get in the way of your players and hurt them fundamentally if you call the wrong plays. Like, why are you have this dude sitting out here in the corner, 3-point shot, when he should be in the post, or you should be running the offense through him, you know, at the top of the key? You can get in the way as a bad coach is my only thing. So I hear what you're saying.
True.
Like, Steve Kerr comes from that tree, but Steve Kerr is also in tune enough to his locker room to know what he can and can't do with those guys. He could ruin that team. You could have a bad coach ruin that team. As great as Golden State is talent-wise, a bad coach could ruin that team. And he knows when they get out the way. And he's not the greatest coach of all time. I'm never going to say that about Steve Kerr. But I'm going to give him credit to know when he knows when to step back. He knows when to call a timeout. He knows when to yell at somebody. If you read the stories, him and Draymond got into it a lot when Draymond was making this ascension as the bad boy of their team, as the tone setter, as the heartbeat of that team. They got into it a lot. But he found a way to get a happy medium with Draymond to make that work, and look at what it's doing for Golden State. So,
when he goes to Sacramento and does it. Let me know when he does that, okay?
Nobody's going to win in Sacramento, though. Ain't nobody going to win in Sacramento. I'm not arguing there, but Sacramento has no talent. Like, nobody's winning Sacramento. I don't care how great of an XNL coach you are. You still have to have talent, and I would agree with you on that point. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's just with coaching, we basically draw a bullseye, and then we shoot an arrow into it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we add so much to it, man. And it's not. I'm not trying to knock the profession. Great profession requires a lot of skill. I'm really kind of upset with how coaching is now because you've kind of lost the variance because analytics has taken over so much of what the NBA does. Everybody's rushing to the trade line. How many threes can we get off? Threes can we stop them from shooting? It's taken away some of the creativity from the game and, I guess, artistic ability of players. Hell, we got people out here counting dribbles, getting mad at people. I'm like, hey, man, you didn't like watching the great for Austin? You didn't like watching Isaiah? Like, you don't watch – you don't like somebody being able to handle it? I want to see Kyrie do something to somebody. I had to throw the homie a shout on that one. I know he'll just belong in that conversation, but I had to throw the homie a shout.
Bill
Parcells used to have a saying, sometimes it's not about the X's and O's. You got to have those Johnny and Joes.
There you go.
Naj, what else you want to wrap? You got a minute here. You want to wrap anything up real quick before we get ready to go here, sir? Appreciate you calling in as always, man.
Absolutely.
Oh, hey, look, I'm going to be just as hard on LeBron as I was on KD. What LeBron is about to do is going to be some sucker stuff, and he's probably going to win a few chips because of it. And I'm going to be there with the old vet, old head, you know what I mean, condemning him just like I've been condemning KD. So I don't like all this teaming up. I agree with it to a degree, but damn, they're going to overkill, man. So
where – unless he's going to join my New Orleans Pelicans, I think he should just stay in Cleveland. I think DQ's probably that way too. Unless he's going to join the Lakers, then he probably, at this point in his career, probably should, I think, just suck it up and try to see what you can do on the team you're already on.
All right. Hey,
Naj, hey, man, like I said, always give us a call, man, if you want to hang out a little more longer, man. But always check in with us, man. We appreciate you checking in, as always. Okay, bro?
Absolutely. Love your perspective.
Y'all be easy, man.
Yeah. All right.
Yes, all right. Love you.
Rob.
Be in touch, brother.
Yeah. Naj, love it, bro. Hit us up. Rob, we got a minute 42 to wrap this up here. We're already in the OT portion, man. We've been talking so much, man. We appreciate Naj calling in as well, too, man. So do this, Rob, and let's get second half of the part here.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're having some great conversation about the NBA so far in this show. We're going to go straight into continue this right into our overtime portion of the show. Unfortunately, we can't give you this portion of the show live, so click on the same link on tomorrow. We got more NBA talk. We got NBA draft talk. We're going to even sneak in a little NFL preview at the end of the show here as well. So you don't want to miss it. Click on the same link. And we got some more exciting conversation coming your way. You don't want to miss it. I promise you, you won't be disappointed. So click on the same link on tomorrow to continue this great sports show here in our overtime portion. Good night, people. And next week, we're going to be on next Sunday night. It's going to be the 24th. It'll be Sunday night, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific. You don't want to miss it. Good night, people.
Love, love, love the people calling in, especially when you have an intelligent argument and we can talk about it rationally and not have the foolishness. Appreciate that kind of commentary as always. Please call back in. We can keep talking about it. We appreciate all the love. We holler at y'all next Sunday. I hope everybody had a fantastic Father's Day. Download the app, the link, so you can listen to the OT portion. Let's keep it rolling.
Mm-hmm. Let's keep it rolling.
Great conversation. All right,
yeah.
Thanks for the call, Nas.
And like
yes,
I
sir.
Said, too, that's the thing that's interesting because, you know, I love the comment. He said, you know, I'm going to give the same type of, you know, say LeBron
right.
as he did KD. Now, like you said, it's interesting, but the thing is, it's not going anywhere, right? Because we're talking about this,
mm-hmm.
You know, for whatever reason, player mobility, as we're going to talk about that topic too, is it ruining the competitive balance? I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's always tough because you're going to have guys that, you know, that want to play with each other, but then how do you stop it? Does the NBA step in and say, no, we're not going to allow this? So, I mean, if I'm in a luxury tax, I mean, you've put the rules in place to try to allow certain things to happen. But if I'm a player and there's a way for me to take less money and join a team and win a championship, I may do that. Or, you know, a chemistry thing or whatever I'm trying to accomplish. I mean, I do think for a fact that if you are a team, you can beat, you can get away with. There's only so much you can do. I mean, you're going to have some talented guys that we're still thinking it takes certain squads, certain sports, you have to have the superstar that kind of pull it up. But you still need a team, you know. There's certain things you can kind of take attention off of, but you still need a team to beat certain players too. So, but again, that's why I'm kind of curious as far as the comment we're going to talk about, because if you hear the rumors about Kawhi, how he's wanting out of the Spurs to join the Lakers, and we'll talk about this in your perspective, JQ.
Article Clippers.
Yeah, you know, but right
he
now,
said LA.
Like the Lakers, he did say LA, but right now, we know what that means. I mean, straight up, you know. So again, if you say, hey, let's hook up. Next thing you know, you got Paul George. Next thing you know, you can have a possibility of having LeBron. That's a whole other conversation, right? Right, JQ? What do you think about that?
But well, to your comment of it, though, unless you put some kind of a floor in terms of salary, if a dude is willing to take less money, what can you do about that if you're the NBA?
Mm-hmm.
So even
saying,
the Players
yeah.
Association may not like it, but there's nothing you can do. If you say, I'm going to take this amount of money so I can sign these other three guys, there's nothing you can do about it. But in terms of the other piece of it, I mean, of course, as a Laker fan, I'm excited about it for sure at the possibility of it. But it's also, if you take a step back, it's a testament to what the NBA has been. You talk about Kawhi, who is from L.A. You talk about Paul George, who is from L.A., who grew up in those Showtime Laker eras, in those early Kobe Shaq eras. And they're like, you know, I'm from L.A., I ball. I want to wear that yellow and that purple. You know what I mean? Like, that's what they wanted to do, being from that area. So if they get to a certain level in the NBA and say, you know what, I'm at this point, I want to go back home and continue that tradition, I'm not opposed to that. If you want to go back to where you're from, if it was good for LeBron, why is it not good for Kawhi and not good for Paul George? If it's good for the Goose, it's got to be good for the Gander. You can't be as mad at them for it when you have somebody else do it as well. You know what I mean? So they're from L.A. It's just not just a bandwagon thing from them. If that's their hometown, they want to go represent their hometown. They grew up loving. They have a chance to go play for that team, and they say, oh, they have talent. I can go help maximize that talent and put some more banners in the Raptors. It sucks for the Sacramentos, to Nigel's point, the other world that don't have that kind of mystique and that kind of firepower to come behind it. But if that's what he wants to do, there's nothing you can do to stop that. I'm not going to hate on that if that's what he wants to do. And you look at it right now, Golden State is the standard. What can we do to knock off Golden State? Houston got close, but Chris Paul got hurt. So they lost in 7 games. That's the gold standard right now. You have to be able to knock those dudes off. So if they're looking around and saying, if I go here and you go there and you go there, now we just, you know, like, you know, Atlas with the globe on our back, you know, we just carrying the weight of the world on our shoulders. Sisyphus rolling the ball up the hill, have it come right down. We're not going to ever get over the hump. We have to kind of come together and get a team, or we have to trust in the GM or the team that we go to that says, okay, I'm going to sign you. In these next 2 years, I'm going to nail all of my draft picks where we draft like how they did, to where we have you and we build around you through the draft. That's a tough place to put yourself in as a player, to say I'm trusting in my GM to knock out all his draft picks to make sure this team is great around me, as opposed to saying, hey, LeBron and PG, hey,
Rob,
we can go here and make this happen. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Good, Rob.
Yeah, and you know, Kawhi, obviously, he's disappointed in the way the Spurs have handled his injury. I don't think, you know, I think if that relationship would have went a lot better this past season, I don't think he will be asking to go to Los Angeles because obviously the Spurs right now are the only team that can offer him the Supermax contract for 5 years, $219 million. So with that being said, I don't think the Spurs are totally out of it yet with Kawhi Leonard because, once again, they are still the only team that can offer him that Supermax, which is, like I mentioned, 5 years, $219 million. Now, he could go to Los Angeles. It's probably going to be somewhere between $30 to $50 million less than that. And which is still a lot of money, and but you know, JQ mentioned, you know, he's from Los Angeles. That could be intriguing, the opportunity for him to go and play for his hometown. But I think ultimately he's just disappointed with the way the Spurs handled the injury this past season or the past 12 months on how they've handled his injury, and I think that's where the disappointment is. He doesn't trust that organization anymore. But I think if that went down a lot better, I don't think he would be leaving the Spurs in that Supermax deal, 5 years, $219 million, which still makes me think the Spurs are not out of it just because they're the only team that can give him that kind of money. And they still may be able to sweet-talk him back when you talk about 5 years, $219 million. So I think we'll see what happens with that. But, you know, the Lakers are in a good position this summer. They have the cap space. They're going to have between $46 to $70 million to spend. And Paul George is a free agent. LeBron James is a free agent. Kawhi Leonard is asking to be traded. So this is the opportunity for the Lakers to try to get back in the swing of things here. And they have a few good young pieces, too, if they can keep some of them with adding these type of players. Would it put them above Golden State? I don't think so. But I think it definitely makes things interesting in the Western Conference.
Listen, if they get those three, they're going to be on par. Here's my own thing about that. We just talked about LaMarcus. He is soft as Charmin, just marshmallowy. If you're Kawhi, you're looking around like, okay, Ginobili is 45. You know, Parker's 41. I don't know. These are estimates, but they old. You're looking at Aldridge just being just super soft. If you're Kawhi, like, yeah, they can give me the most money, but what can I really do with this team in this landscape? I'm looking at Philadelphia having a really strong nucleus. I'm looking at Boston having a really strong nucleus. I'm looking at Golden State being the gold standard. I'm looking at Houston having a really strong nucleus. What am I going to accomplish staying in San Antonio the way we are currently constructed? So if I'm him, I understand it. You put the pressure all on them because I can opt out after this year and I can walk away for nothing. So you can sit here and have this hard line sense if you want to, but if I hold firm to what I'm true to, and listen, they are in a very small club of young billionaire athletes or multimillionaire athletes in that sport. They probably run in the same circles a lot of the times. I still feel like he's still in it. The only thing about the Lakers is I don't want it to turn into a Carmelo situation where you give up so much, where you gut the team. You know what I mean? But they are in a situation where they can sign Paul George and LeBron, and you get rid of Randle because you're not going to be able to have his he's a restricted free agent. He's going to make too much money. And I talked about it before. Nobody's going to take a ball. I'd be surprised. Nobody wants the ball circus. So you're talking about Kuzma, Ingram, and probably that pick to get Kawhi Leonard. Do you do that and keep Ball and then get Kawhi and get Paul George and LeBron, and then you can fill in around them with those guys that are veterans that want to ring chasing? Like, everybody can't sign with San Antonio. I mean, Golden State. So they got to go somewhere else. That's another, you know, destination where they may want to go in terms of going to L.A. with that star-studded team to try to get them a ring. I feel like if that happens, that puts them on par with Golden State. I mean, I hear you, Dre, chemistry and learning how to play together.
Yeah.
All plays a great part in terms of that really is going to work. But in terms of on paper, if you give those three guys and you keep, you know, Hart and probably Ball, because I'm not going to trade for Ball. I want no part of LeVar Ball and his foolishness. But I get the other pieces, but I have those pieces with the Lakers still left. It's like, okay, we you know, if we can get some guys on the fringes that can shoot and some guys that can play defense, we can get them a run for their money. I'm going to do his best going to L.A. In that circumstances, I'm going to say if you stay in Cleveland, I stay in Oklahoma City, I stay in San Antonio, we knocked out by the second round of the playoffs and we still sitting here watching, texting each other like, damn, we messed up. We should have got together. Now we're watching these Golden State get another title. We could have given them a run for their money. Like, that's really what has happened with the way Golden State is playing basketball. Like, that is just the decisions you have to make as a star player. I can't stay here and be the guy with a little to no help or some marginal help when I need you and you and you so I can knock off these dudes.
Yeah. When you look at those three players, too, they're very similar players, obviously. I don't look at Kawhi Leonard and Paul George as being the distributor and playmaker that LeBron is, but as far as they all three can guard on the perimeter, they're all really good defenders with a good wingspan. And I think for the most part, today's NBA is positionless basketball. And so I think they will be able to make it work, even though they all three of them are about 6'8" and 6'7" or somewhere in that ballpark with similar size. For the most part, today's NBA is positionless basketball. I think if you're going to have those three guys on your starting lineup, I think all you would need is a center who can control the paint and another guard who can really just spot up and shoot if they're open. And for the most part, unless you can get a fourth all-star to somehow go and play with you as well. But for the most part, they would definitely be in the running. The difference with Golden State right now is a three-point shot. Like I said, you can't trade threes. You can't trade they hitting threes and you hitting twos. You just can't. You have to be able to knock down the three-point shots at a higher percentage if you're going to beat Golden State, because they're going to shoot the ball extremely well. And a lot of times they're beating teams because of that element. You know, other teams are going out of court scoring twos, and they're hitting threes. And next thing you know, it's a 13-15-point difference.
Only thing about that is those three guys could play on the perimeter with Kevin Durant, Clay, and Curry.
They can defend.
They can defend them, and they can run them off that three-point line. So that advantage they have over most teams, they wouldn't have over that team. You're absolutely right. Over 28 of the other NBA teams, you're absolutely right. Well, over that team, if you fool around them and get with some shooters, some guys that are just out there to play defense and rebound, they would have a much worse chance. I just don't think they have that chance if they try to do it individually, where you build a team around that guy here and around that guy here and around that guy here. If you want to knock off Golden State, unless they get injuries or they just start fighting in the locker room, you're going to have to come together. Come together.
Yep.
Right down.
Right,
you're going to have to do it.
Over me.
Hey, listen, you're going to have to do it. That's just where you are.
That may be one of the better squads, too, you know, because Kawhi, I've always been a huge fan of him. I mean, just that dude is like, you know, just defensively scoring. I mean, all around great player, man. I definitely think that having Paul George, Paul's going to want to do anything to win after his the failed OKC experiment. And then you know about LeBron, he's going to be hungry too, man. So now you get guys that have that that singular focus. And then, like you said, you add complementary pieces. You know, I don't know if you got to get rid of, you know, Kuzma or whatever. You probably don't need to get rid of that. You got to, you know, if you're keeping Ball, you got kind of some veterans to kind of help him out. You got, you know, Ingram. You got a really good squad, like you talked about too. So now it's all about, okay, let's get in the foxhole together. Let's see what we got to do. This is our task, and let's see if we can do it. So again, not that it's easy, but at least I agree with JQ. I mean, you've got to make is a, you know, good three players are interchangeable, as you said, Rob. You know that, you know, you've got like Paul can guard Durant. You got Kawhi that can guard Durant. You got LeBron. It's not just LeBron kind of fighting the whole squad. I mean, yeah, it's gonna be a challenge. But again, at least you have some length. You know, if Lonzo goes and hey, you know, shut down Curry. That's hard as hell to do, but you know, shut him down. Shut down Clay. At least you kind of have some length to actually do that. You know, same thing about Ingram. Ingram's a tall guy too. So again, how can you make that happen? Let's really talk about this too, really quickly too, because I know I want to talk about the NBA mock draft coverage real quickly, and just really quickly, we got to talk about this. If that would transcend the sports world, what does that mean, Rob, in your opinion?
Well, basically, obviously, LeBron will be going to one of the more historical NBA organizations if he does that. Obviously, we're playing in Cleveland. In Miami, historically, they have not been great NBA organizations. So we talked about, you know, things have not been set up for LeBron. But this would be the first time he'll go to a historically great organization in the NBA. And basically, how would that, you know, transcend? I think it would. I think this would, even bring I'm not a fan of the Lakers, but I don't think that's no secret either. But I will tell you this, I would cheer like heck for the Lakers to beat the Warriors. That's how much I hate the Warriors. And so I would cheer like heck for the Lakers to beat the Warriors. Yeah, I think it would. This would be a huge story for the NBA if a guy of LeBron James' magnitude goes to the Lakers. I think we're talking ratings increasing and everything else will take place for LeBron James. And the NBA had a very successful year, even though the finals was a joke, 4-0. I think overall, you look at the ratings, they're one of the few sports leagues where the ratings actually increase this past year, both on a national level and as well on a global level. But I think with LeBron going to the Lakers, you'll see another huge spike in ratings from the NBA standpoint. You're going to the second largest market in the country, a popular organization not only here in America but around the world. So, yeah, it would definitely be a huge message to the sports world.
I agree with that to the limit of who else comes with them, because I feel like if it's just him, and as much as I love my Lakers team and I feel like they have a decent core, it's still not enough to get over the hump, and it's just going to be Cleveland West. It's going to be Cleveland West and another failure. And it might be a good storyline, but in order for it to be transcended in terms of the topic of this, he has to get Paul George or Kawhi Leonard to come with him to actually make it be something where you feel like they have a chance to be Golden State. Like we talked about, they get those three. If we talk about getting those three, you're going to probably come off of you don't keep Kuzma, Ball, and Ingram. You're going to lose two of those three and that pick that they got from Cleveland. I think that's the starting point for any negotiation with San Antonio, knowing if San Antonio is on their P's and Q's. Like, you're not going to just give Kawhi away. You're not going to give him away to another Western Conference team that's going to knock you down a step in the totem pole of Western Conference supremacy. So, for me, I feel like it could be, but he's going to have help to where it gives him a fighting chance. And let's not leave Houston out of it. Houston and Golden State moving forward here next year and in the next couple of years to where if he goes there, I just don't want it to be a failure of he went there and nobody else came with him. And now he's getting knocked out. Now, can you imagine him trying to do that on his own to face Houston in the semis and maybe Golden State in the finals in the Western Conference? Like, it still feels like it's another crazy hard battle he's going to fight that he's just trading Philadelphia and Boston for Houston and Golden State. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's going to have somebody else come with him to make it tangible of can he really do this? Can he help bring this organization back to where they were? If it's just him, it's good in the beginning, but it doesn't have longevity. If he brings somebody else with him and it brings longevity to it, then it becomes transcendent.
Yeah, and I really believe this. If LeBron goes to L.A., Paul George is going with him. I think that's a done deal. I mean, LeBron almost got Paul George to go to Cleveland last year, if you all remember. And the Cleveland organization just couldn't make the deal work for whatever dumb reason. But if LeBron goes to the Lakers, Paul George for sure is going with him to the Lakers. Now, getting Kawhi Leonard, that may be a little tricky because I know Greg Popovich is not in the business of making the Lakers better. I can tell you that now.
Mm-hmm.
He is not in the business of making the Lakers better. He will probably look to trade Kawhi Leonard to any other organization but the Los Angeles Lakers. And and obviously, he's still under contract with the Spurs, and the Spurs could still offer him the max deal. So he's not in the business of making the Lakers, but Lakers will have to come with a super sweet deal if they're going to be able to pull him away from the Spurs. Because Popovich hates the Lakers, and he's not, like I said, he's not in the business of making the Lakers better. But Paul George, for sure, if LeBron goes to the Lakers, Paul George is with them. I can almost guarantee you that.
Yep, I agree with you about Pop. The only thing about it is, as more people know about Kawhi wanting to leave and the fact that he can opt out of that contract, the Spurs lose leverage and bargaining power in terms of where they can send him. Because if everybody knows he's going to L.A. after this year's over to opt out, and they're not going to give San Antonio a good deal for him. So you force San Antonio's hand. So I agree. If he was under contract for three more years before he could opt out, San Antonio is in a better position to bargain and send him where they want to, where a team can say, you know what, we can convince Kawhi in 3 years or 2 years that we have this kind of culture where he might want to stay. But we talk about a year, and these kind of stories keep coming out where it's like, okay, it's LA or bust. Nobody's giving San Antonio a deal. So you force San Antonio's hands to have to deal with the Lakers. But you're right, though. Pop does not want to make the Lakers any better. And he shouldn't. I totally, I mean, as a Laker fan, I love the Lakers, but I totally understand where he comes from. That I'm not going to do anything to make another Western Conference team a juggernaut to where I have to climb them and Houston and Golden State. Why would I do that? I totally understand that from his standpoint. But they don't have the leverage power right now. If he comes out and is like, you know, I'm up. If it's not L.A., whatever. Don't do it. I'm not resigning. What are you going to give up for him?
Good call. Good call. All right, gentlemen. I really want to get to the NBA draft here. And like I said, it's happening on Thursday. Let's talk about – no, it's totally cool. Let's talk about this here. We got to talk – there's a lot of moving parts, little moving pieces. And I love this – Rob, were you, I want to let you talk about this because I didn't even get a chance to post it yet too, man, because it's been updated. And like I said, really good draft. I know there's a point guard that's from France that you've got – the I think you've got him going to the Lakers, as a matter of fact, Elie Oka. And I think that's I'll probably butcher the name. That's a guy I kind of think the San Antonio may be targeting because they may have some shades of, you know, little Tony Parker. But again, nothing has changed for the first, you know, for the first pick here. But I'm kind of curious what's happening. We don't know what's going to happen. And I know, like, you know, you've got some interesting picks for Marvin Bagley. Go ahead, Rob. Go ahead and talk about this, too, because we'll talk about where we stand and everything like that, Rob. So go ahead.
Yeah, well, no surprise at number one. DeAndre Ayton is a lock to go number one. When you look at his size, his athleticism, his strength, and he's really improved, even shooting, stepping out, hitting the three-point line and things of that nature, which in today's NBA, you have to be able to stretch the floor, and that's what these guys are looking for. They're looking for big men that can even step out and shoot from behind the arc. And you look at most of these guys at the top of the draft, DeAndre Ayton, Marvin Bagley, Jaren Jackson, they all can step out and shoot. And they all can play in the post as well. So they all have that type of versatility, and they all can run the floor, and they all are very athletic. And that's why you can see those three guys all in the top three, from Marvin Bagley to Sacramento and Jaren Jackson to Atlanta. Luka Doncic, obviously coming over from Slovenia, having been number four. Versatile player. A lot of NBA scouts are really high on this guy. And in some people's mind, he's the second best player in this draft. I have him going down to number four to Memphis.
If not first.
At the moment. I'm sorry?
I said, if not first.
Yeah. Some people even have number one. But I think it's a lock that DeAndre Ayton is going to be the number one pick in this draft. He's going to go number one. I have Michael Porter Jr. This is the highest I've ever had him, and number five.
Crazy.
I think he's really starting to showcase himself in some of these private workouts, and with his ball handling ability, his versatility, of what we really didn't get a chance to see in the college level due to the injury. A guy I really like here at number six is Colin Sexton from Alabama. And I think if LeBron stays in Cleveland, in my opinion, this would be the guy he should want because he's feisty. He's going to get it done on both ends of the floor. He can be a guy that can be a real true point guard. He's a guy that I put ahead of Trae Young just because of what he can do on both ends of the floor. And he's a guy right here that I think that could be a real dog in the NBA with his confidence, with his athletic ability. And he, like I said, he gets it done on both ends of the floors. Muhammad Bamba at number seven in Chicago. You're talking about a pure shot blocker. This guy's got great quickness. He's got great timing. I think you've heard it here first. He will be a first-team all-defensive player in the NBA. Obviously, there's still some work on the offensive end, but he has the potential, and I think he will be a first-team all-NBA defensive player. And you will see him lead the league in block shots on a few occasions because of his timing on the defensive end. His length off the ball and on the ball defense is phenomenal, and so you're going to see him be do really well. Mikal Bridges, very versatile player. We saw him in the national championship game. We saw him throughout the year for Villanova. Really stepped out and hit the three-point shot. He can defend as well. He had some versatility, him going number eight to Cleveland. Wendell Carter from Duke. He's seen him over since 2 years ago in high school. He's lost a lot of weight. He's trimmed down. He's really worked on his outside shot as well. He's become a better basketball player. I have him going number nine to the Knicks, and the aforementioned Trae Young could really shoot the basketball. Worried
that's
about
crazy
him on the defensive end.
Yeah. I said, that's, I'm kind of worried about, I don't know if he's going to drop that far, Rob. That's pretty interesting, going to 10. That's curious. Okay.
Well,
yeah, all right.
I got him at 10. He could go as high as number 4. There's no doubt about that. But I'm a little worried about him on the defensive end right now.
Yeah,
and that's
too.
The main reason. I think if it was a spot-up shooter, he could be great for the Sixers with Ben Simmons handling the basketball a lot more.
Yes, Lord.
But to me, Sexton is the better overall basketball player from a point guard standpoint. He's a better athlete. I think he could bring more to the table, and that's why I have him better ahead of Trae Young at the point guard position. Kevin Knox is another real sleeper here. He's a guy that could really move up. He's been doing really well in the combines and the private workouts. He's got good size, good athleticism as well. He's a freshman coming out of Kentucky. I have Miles Bridges and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander going to the Clippers and back-to-back picks. Robert Williams, a 7-footer from Texas A&M. A couple of players at 15 and 16 I'll just make some brief comments on. Kyrie Thomas is a versatile guard from Creighton, maybe one of the better, more underrated players in this draft. He can play either guard position. You may say, well, why would the Wizards take him when they have John Wall and they have Bradley Beal? He's a guy that could be a perfect guy coming off the bench for him to give him some depth in that position here. Like I said, I think he's one of the more underrated players that a lot of people are not familiar with in this draft. And the same thing with Zaire Smith, 6'5", the guy came out of nowhere with Texas Tech, and Texas Tech probably had one of the better basketball seasons ever, especially since the days of Robert Montgomery Knight as the head coach. But Zaire Smith was one of the main reasons. I mean, great athlete, 6'5 wingman who can really shoot, can really get to the paint as well. Those are two players you really watch. So what?
He's about 6'5". Is he 6'5"? I thought he was shorter than that. Really? Okay, Zaire Smith.
No, he's 6'5". Yeah, yeah.
Okay, okay, cool. I thought he was shorter. Care. Go ahead. Okay, go ahead.
Number 18, we saw him be the MVP of the national championship game, Dante DiVincenzo. He's really moved up. Prior to this season, he probably wasn't even thought of as a second-round pick. And now he's moved up to the middle of the first round, more than likely. And 6'5",
great
he's
spot.
Really – yeah, and he's really played well in a lot of the combine workouts as well. And I think one of the things that scouts have turned out to be really impressed with is how well he's played on the defensive end. So he's not just been a guy that's hitting down, knocking down three-point shots in these workouts. So he's really showed a lot more of his versatility, handling the basketball, playing better on the defensive end. So he showed a lot of toughness in his combine. So he's really helped himself. You know, initially he entered the draft without signing with an agent, but he's really proved himself in these workouts. To your Atlanta Hawks, Gary Trent Jr., really good spot-up shooter. Have him going number 19 from Duke. Landry Shamet, another guy who can play either guard position from Wichita State. He can play the point. He can play the two. He'll be one of those perfect kind of guards that can come off the bench and help you with his versatility as well. Now, Mitchell Robinson is an interesting story here, 21 in Utah. He's a guy that's from the New Orleans area, 7 feet tall, can run like a deer, extremely athletic, did not play college basketball. And I hear that the Lakers have promised him if he makes it to 25, they're going to take him. So we'll have to see if that's true. But right now I have him going number 21 to the Utah Jazz. And we have put him with Rudy Gobert there. But he's 7 feet athlete. He's really worked on his game, even though he didn't play any organized basketball here for the last year. So, you know, it's a little bit of an unknown, but I hear a lot of teams have been really impressed with him in his private workout as well. The athleticism is there, but I'm sure he's got to be a little raw without playing any organized basketball here for the past year. Let's see here. That's, you know, Andre mentioned Okobo, the point guard from France. I have him going to the Lakers right now. The Lakers, I'm pretty confident they are going to try to move Lonzo Ball. I don't know if they're going to be successful. But this is an intriguing prospect. He's 6 feet two. He's got a wingspan of like a 6 foot eight person. And so he's got a, you know, great length. He's been playing phenomenal in international game here as well. he's had some games. We've put up 40-something points over there in an international competition. So he's a very intriguing prospect as well. And Andre mentioned, I know the Spurs are high on him as well, which could take him at number 18. Aaron Holiday is another intriguing guard. Obviously, he's got two brothers in the NBA as well, so the genes there. I have him going to Boston at 27. And Andre, tell me a little bit about Josh Okoji from Georgia Tech.
You know, I'm kind of surprised that he actually left to the NBA because, I mean, I didn't think that he was, like, NBA material. I mean, I thought he had a lot of he did really good as a freshman, but I just figured this, I mean, you know, he's got, you know, good size, you know, 6'5", you know, good score, but, you know, I just feel like if he stayed longer, he would have had more opportunity to grow. But, I mean, I guess you got to strike when the fire is hot, iron is hot, excuse me, because he's been doing well in the workouts. He definitely has the athleticism, as we talked about, but, too, like I said, I think he can grow more. But, you know, watching him, I didn't think this guy is like an NBA player per se yet, but, I mean, hey, he's been performing well in the workouts, bro. So, you know, props to Josh for sure.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You said it right on the head there that his workouts, he's been phenomenal in both the combine as well as the individual workouts. And so he's worked himself up to, in my initial drafts, I didn't even have him in the first two rounds at all. But now he's worked his way up into having a good chance of being a late first-round pick, early second-round pick in this draft right here. I have him going to Golden State at number 28. And last one I'll comment on is Jalen Brunson. He's
like
somewhere in that late first round, early second round as well. Doesn't quite, in my opinion, have NBA athleticism, but he's got the smarts, he's got the brains, he's got the ability to control the pace of the game. And so I think he could be a solid backup NBA point guard. I don't know if I envision him being a starter, but I think he could be that guy that could come off the bench and control the pace for you and give you a solid 10 to 15 minutes a night.
Somebody said he's a guy that you can, you know, he's going to be the guy that's not going to be athletic. He's going to be in the NBA for like 10-plus years just because he's been around, you know, coach's son, you know, Rick Brunson is his dad. I mean, on a championship squad. I mean, this guy is just – he just has all the intangibles, man. So, again, it's hard to teach that, man.
Yeah.
So that's why – I think it's a great pick. I mean, you know, he may not be a starter, but he's going to be in the league for a long time, man. So just, I think it's a great pick, you know, for the Hawks. If they can pull that off, I mean, I don't know, you know, they're looking at 30, 34 because it's tough because I think they like, it really depends what's happening. JQ, I'll let you get your comments into, and I'll talk about this too, because I want to ask you, Rob, because you didn't have Anthony Simmons at all, the high school guy in this draft, which I think it's interesting as well because there's some, you know, talk about him. And then just looking at Kevin Herter, is that guy from Maryland, the shooting guard? The Hawks are really high on him, so I thought that may be a guy that started at 19. Yeah, or the Lakers. Yeah, so there's a couple players that I'm looking at. Word on the street is that the Hawks really liked Trae Young. I'm kind of scared about that. I hope that didn't happen at 3. But again, not that that's going to happen for any reason, but I just heard that they were impressed with him. And I do want to talk, Rob, about Michael Porter because I know he had some injury concerns and then things happened whenever earlier. He had another – I think he had a hip flexor or something like that. And this was a guy that I was hot. I was like, this is the guy I wanted. And now I'm like, man, is this guy going to make it? Because, you know, if you have a lot of injuries and whatnot, this is not looking good. So, I mean, he's been doing good in his workouts, Rob, but, I mean, is that just more or less like you think it's like something that is it a good risk, you think, or is the team going to get kind of like, is it worth that reward, I guess, if you will?
Well, I think, you know, he's still, with a lot of things, you know, his workouts have been solid, and but I think the thing that these teams are looking at him, they're still looking at him as a 19-year-old with a lot of potential. And to, you know, get with the right strength and conditioning coach, they think they can get him on the right path. And so, you know, it could be a little bit of a risk. It's just going to be a matter of what team is willing to take that risk. And but I think that's what a lot of teams are looking at it right here. They're looking at a chance to – he's still young. He probably just needs to get with the right strength and conditioning coach to get him on the right path for his career, set him up for success for the rest of his career. So it's going to be real interesting. But teams are intrigued by his talent. They're definitely intrigued by that. And they're definitely intrigued by his versatility, his ball handling ability, his size. You know, to be able to handle the basketball at that size, you know, puts you at a pretty good advantage. You know, and so teams are looking at that. So we'll see. I mean, right now, where do I have him going? Number four? No, I have him five.
Yeah.
To Dallas. At the moment.
Yep.
So this is the highest I've had him. I mostly had him in the 8 to 12 range. But this is the highest I've had him in any of my mocks so far. So you know, we'll see what happens come Thursday night. And Anthony Simmons, he's a guy I've had in the first round for quite some time as well. But we just talked about some players that really have just improved themselves. We're talking about Josh Okogie, and we're talking about Jalen Brunson and players of that nature. The funny thing is I have Simmons going right at the top of the second round. I've had him going in the first round for quite some time, but as we mentioned, there have just been some players that have really improved their stock. That's probably a move ahead of him. We talk about Aaron Holiday from UCLA, who's got some really good experience. Landry Shamet from Wichita State, Dante DiVincenzo. There have just been a lot of players that have worked their way into the first round.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a lot there. Just to be brief, Doc is going to Memphis with Paul Gasol. I mean, not Paul Gasol, his brother Marc Gasol. I think that's a good fit for him, just that international flair and kind of somebody to show him the ropes. If you can get Gasol and get Collins the ball like they can to stay healthy, and you add him to that mix, somebody that they're not going to win in the Western Conference, but just to kind of rebound a little bit. He was really in a lot of play for the number one overall pick for a lot of the season. Some of the scouts have sided on him a little bit, but I think for Memphis that would be a great fit at number four. Like you talked about, Colin Sexton for Orlando. Orlando needing a shot in the arm. They missed out on Alfred Payton. They traded him to Phoenix. I finally getting the point guard position solved for them down there in Orlando. Somebody that's been a ball player here in the Southeast, I think that translates for Orlando, and also in terms of selling tickets. I think that's a good call for them. I just don't think at Cleveland, and it may be too much pressure for this kid, but the hype on Trae Young, and if you're talking about losing LeBron and you got that 8th overall pick, I understand what you're talking about with Bridges. He's a good ball player, and so is Wendell Carter as well. But I feel like they're going to look at him and say he could have, and it's unfair, but he could have Curry upside, and I just don't see Cleveland passing him off when you're going to probably lose LeBron. And he may never be that guy, and I'm not saying he's going to be that guy. I just don't see Cleveland letting him go past them on the board. Me personally, I just don't see that happening.
I agree.
And just to move down in a little bit to the Lakers with that pick, I think that's contingent maybe on them moving ball, because you're going to say, okay, I have got a point guard. Am I going to draft this guy and let him be the shooting guard and let Ball continue to be the point guard? So now I have an undersized kind of backcourt there in L.A. if you don't sign these free agents that we talked about earlier. And Kevin Herter, I've heard a lot of teams are really, really intrigued about him as well. I'd be surprised if he lasted to 29.
I agree.
Maybe that's just smokescreen, people saying, you know, what they need to say to try to hope that he falls to him. So that could be that
too.
Piece of it as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's just my take on it. I'm looking at Bates Diop. I think he's going to be fantastic. Chicago, I'm not really sold on Bamba, and I just think that's too high for somebody that's that limited. I feel like he could have that upside, but he's a one-trick pony to me. And if he doesn't excel in that one area, you're talking about taking a top 10 lottery pick on that guy. I'm always wanting just to be like, I need you to have a little bit more of a refined game for me to take you in the top 10. But I was hard. I'm really high on Wendell Carter. If you compare him with a healthy Porzingis, I think that's really nasty in the front court. If they can ever get the point guard they drafted last year to ever show up for them. That's really nasty. If you got Porzingis back, I really like Wendell Carter. I just, like I've said it before, I think Marvin Bagley has just sucked all the oxygen out of the room for the Duke draft picks, and I think Wendell Carter is really flying under the radar. He's going to be a really good player for somebody. So, to me, those are the things I take away when I look at that. Defensive zone for me, for San Antonio, is a great fit for him. in terms of what he can do and what Pop wants his guys to do. I feel like that is a match made in heaven for them in terms of player to situation and coach and philosophy. That's a fantastic pick for San Antonio.
Are they really talking about trading Lonzo Ball? Is that really going to happen, you think, though? Is that just kind of like, I mean, is that really about to happen?
I think they're tired of LeVar Ball in the circus, and I told you that when they drafted him, that that is going to wear thin. But the thing is, who wants to take that circus into their house? Nobody wants that. And when we talked about getting Kawhi, I feel like I think Ball, unless you overpay to include Ball in that package, is going to be a non-starter. You're going to have to come off of Kuzma. You're going to have to come off of Ingram. And you're going to probably have to come off of that pick they got from Cleveland. And to get Kawhi, I just don't think anybody's trading for LeVar because you're not. I mean, for Lonzo, because you're not just trading for Lonzo, you're also trading for LeVar, and that cannot be undersold. That's a real thing that no front office wants to deal with. Talking about the coach sucks and how he ain't played his ball, and they got to play his boy, and they got to draft his other two sons, or they all gonna leave. Like nobody wants that. You know what I mean? Like it's just a headache that he's not worth in terms of what he does on the court. He's good at what he does. Don't get me wrong. To me, he's a really young kind of Jason Kidd. Can't shoot coming to the league, but he can orchestrate the offense. He's going to give you rebounds. He's going to give you assists, but you can slack off of him until he can prove to you that he can make that three-point shot. That's who Lonzo is. He's Jason Kidd 15 years later. But Jason Kidd didn't have LeVar Kidd talking crazy about, you know what I'm saying, just
that's
talking stupid. Like, that's the problem that you're going to have with him, and you knew that he drafted him, and now you're stuck with that circus, and nobody wants that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're going to look back at this draft, too, and I wonder if there are any – it's hard to predict superstars or anything like that. You do wonder, is there going to be, like, a star coming out of this draft? I mean, there's not a superstar, clearly, but is there a star coming out of this draft, Rob, that you think – and I'll let you answer that, too, as well, Jakey, because it's you look at – I mean, that's a lot for Trae Young. I don't think he's going to be Curry. I think his high ceiling is going to be freaking – somebody said it because his high ceiling could be like Isaiah Thomas or Lou Williams, if you will. I'm like, wow, that's kind of – I mean, because he's not that big. He's not as tall as Steph Curry. He's only like 6 foot. He's skinny, man. Mm-hmm. He's not even – I mean, it's just like for the take that pounding, you wonder about that, man. I mean, that high, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, Lou Williams, out of the three guys you just mentioned – may be the closest compare. I mean, Isaiah Thomas and Steph Curry, come on. I mean, ultimately, you know, Steph Curry hasn't even made the Isaiah Thomas status yet. But, you know.
Not Isaiah Thomas like Pistons. I'm talking about Isaiah Thomas for Cleveland.
This Isaiah Thomas.
You're talking about the current Isaiah Thomas.
Not that Isaiah Thomas. No, I'm sorry. I should have been more clear. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's what they're saying. Because, you know, Isaiah Thomas is so short and, you know, he was kind of a defensive liability because he was kind of, that's why the Celtics were like, hey, we're kind of happy. But then it just, he kind of hit the fire at the time. But that's what they're comparing. Like, this guy is like, that's where he hopes to be, you know. So, go ahead, Rob. That's what I'm going to say. Go ahead.
Yeah. Now, I'm not sold that he can be a guy that can run the NBA offense, too, Trae Young. I'm almost thinking, you know, going to somewhere like Philadelphia might be the perfect fit for him because Simmons is going to run the offense, and he can play off the ball a little more. And so I'm not completely sold that he's a guy that can run the NBA offense just yet. I mean, he probably can develop into that, but I don't see a natural point guard like I see with Colin Sexton. A guy that can really run an offense and get other players involved. And so I think it would benefit him to go to a team that has a guy that can be that guy for them. So I think going to the Sixers could be a perfect fit for him. And obviously, if LeBron stays in Cleveland, that could be a good fit for Cleveland as well because he has someone that can, you know, control the basketball, get to the paint, drive and kick out to him, and he can hit knockdown jump shots. Mikal Bridges is a real sleeper as well. And what I mean by that, he has the potential to be a Kawhi Leonard-type ball player. And he has that potential to get it done on a defensive end, control the basketball a little bit, hit knockdown three-point shots, get in the paint. So he's a guy that I think has the potential. As you said, if we're going to have seen these all-stars coming out of this draft, he's a guy I would be really paying close attention to as well. He has that kind of potential as well. Colin Sexton, I think, is a sleeper. And all three of the top three guys, DeAndre Ayton, Bagley, Jaren Jackson, they all have potential to possibly be an NBA All-Star as well. And when you start getting into the middle of the draft, a guy to watch could be a Kevin Knox, as far as possibly being an All-Star down the road. Zaire Smith is a sleeper, too. He's another guy that's a sleeper. Mitchell Robinson, because of his athleticism, he's a guy that you can really look at possibly down the road. And then Okobo from France is another sleeper to watch
like
as well. So those are just some guys that I think has that kind of potential if they get in the right situation and the right fit with the right coaching. They have potential to be an All-Star. And I know all of these guys I just mentioned are not going to be All-Stars, but I'm sure some of these guys will.
Yep.
Listen, I'm not going to knock that, but the one I'm going to go back to is going to be Wendell Carter. Think about somebody that comes in heavy set and goes and takes coaching and loses weight and transforms his body and develops that kind of skill set that he has to play center in this NBA where he can also switch around and play that position in the basketball that you talk about, Rob. I just think that Marvin Bagley is phenomenal. Don't get me wrong. But
I like Carter, too. I forgot to add him to the list. But yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. When you have Bagley there, he just sucks the oxygen out of the room, and you almost forget about Carter. And I really feel like he's going to be somebody that is going to go somewhere and is going to ball out and have a really, really good career and be on that all-star cusp, if not an all-star. So I agree with the people you said. I just want to throw Carter into that mix. I like that guy, and I like his game. I just think that he gets underrated just because of the guy that he's coming to the draft with in Bagley.
Yeah, and I totally agree with Wendell Carter. And he's an inside-outside guy, too. He's really improving on stepping out and hitting that 15 to 20-foot jump shot. And he's also a guy who's got a great spin move in the paint, too. So he's definitely a guy that's going to be intriguing there. And he gets it done on the defensive end, too.
Gotcha. JQ, I'm just happy that you're not Wendell Carter's agent, man. That's good to hear, man. So that's awesome here. So good job
that,
man.
Well, kind of like where you're agent somebody. For that book you're trying to sell.
Same thing. Hey, no shame in my game. I am strictly telling you it's a good book to listen to. No, I mean, I'm just saying it's very interesting. Yeah. That's amazing. It's very relevant. No, I'm just saying, I wouldn't say it. I'm just saying.
I believe.
Good deal. Hey, really, I'm kind of scared of the lady. We're gonna jump on any moment here. Really quickly, just do the top 10 AFC, both of you guys, and let's wrap up the show. Go ahead, Rob.
All right. I'm going to still keep New England in the number one spot. I know it's not popular because New England is kind of like
fast,
LeBron
Rob.
James of the NFL. They have a lot of haters. But obviously, they're the AFC champions. And I think they made a lot of improvements on the offseason, too, when you look at the offensive line improvements, giving Tom Brady some more weapons. Still a little concerned on with their defense, but I think, you know, Belichick typically has a way of finding ways to still be competitive with the defensive personnel that he has. So until somebody beats him, I still have them as the number one team in the AFC. Number two, even though they got upset in the divisional round, I'm still going to go with Pittsburgh. And when you look at Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, Ben Roethlisberger, when you look at that, you know, JQ, don't curse me out, but I know you hate both of these first two teams.
That's my first two as well.
Okay, all right, we're on the same page then. So, yeah, when you look at the personnel and you look at that 1-2-3 punch on offense, and some of the other guys around him as well. And obviously, you know, I'm still – you're going to have to prove me wrong as far as the first-round pick. You know, I thought that was a very big reach where they took him in the draft. And so they would definitely have to prove me wrong with that. But I think they finally got some depth at the corner position as well. Obviously, Ryan Shazier and not having him is still going to be a huge loss for them, but I still think they're the second-best team in the AFC, even with Jacksonville beating them twice last year, which leads to my third team, Jacksonville. I have them at the third spot in the AFC, but I think they're very close to being that number two team. When you look at their defensive personnel, this has got to be the best defense in the NFL. When you look at it from a personnel standpoint, you look at the number of pass rushers they got on this team, and then they just got more defensive line help in the draft. And then the cornerbacks, I mean, you probably got two All-Pro corners, and AJ Bouye, and Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah.
So when you look at their defensive personnel, it's got to be second to none in the entire NFL, in my opinion. So they're going to be in a lot of football games just because you're going to be. It's going to be tough for us to score on them. You look at the linebackers. Telvin Smith and the linebacker collection they have, they are loaded on the defensive side of the football. And I think even offensively,
I'm just messing with you. I was going to talk about offense.
You say they have no offense. Well, you know. And like I said, from a defensive standpoint, they're going to be hard to score on. They're going to be in a lot of football games. They're going to be in their defense is going to score points. I mean, they have that kind of defense where they're going to call sack fumbles. They're going to get INTs. Their defense is going to score points for them. I mean, with the type of defensive personnel that they have, they have playmakers on that side of the football. And offensively, Blake Bortles, of course, is you know, obviously, he played his best in the playoffs last year. So if you're Jacksonville, you're hoping some of that's going to carry over into next season. You're still going to have Leonard Fournette, who control with that defense, and you can control the football on offense. And they improved the offensive line. And they got some weapons on the perimeter that hopefully is going to help them this year as well for their standpoint. So I think they're knocking on the door to being that legitimate number two team in the AFC. And you know, they were all the way in it with New England to the end. And so they could be knocking on that door to being that team in the AFC as well if they can fix some of the things on the offensive side of the football. One of the teams that was really hot at the end of the year, and I was really hoping to see them in the playoffs because I thought they could have caused some damage in the AFC playoffs, was San Diego. And we talked about Jacksonville and their pass rushers, but San Diego has them too. They can really get to the quarterback. They can really get to the quarterback. And they have one of the better cornerbacks in the game in Haywood, Casey Haywood back there, another guy who's one of the top corners. Yeah. And so when you look at their personnel on the defensive side of the football, and offensively they're a little bit ahead of the game than Jacksonville, even though Phillip Rivers is getting up in age. Keenan Allen was a straight-up beast last year as far as receiving the football. And he even put up some big numbers against some of the better corners in the league last year as well. And so when you look at that standpoint, I don't think they're as good as Jacksonville defensively, but they're not far behind, but they're a little bit ahead of the game offensively than Jacksonville is right now.
They got Derwin James.
Yeah, yep. Got Derwin James back there in the secondary who he got in the draft. And that was a straight-up steal what he got him in the draft as well. So, they're going to be really good on defense, and they're going to be good on offense as well. So they're going to be a real team to watch. And they were one of the better teams, and not only in the AFC, but they were one of the better teams in the league at the tail end of the last season, last 10 games or so. Number five, this is where I started to struggle from 5 to 10. The top four for me, I think, was fairly easy. Number five, I'm going to go with the KC Chiefs. What happened?
Yeah, I was going to just stop at four. There are no 5 to 10. Those are the four, and everybody else is the crapshoot.
I agree.
It's the truth.
I agree. Yeah.
I'll just mention the teams. I have KC at number five. I think the big question mark is, you traded Alex Smith. Is the quarterback Mahomes ready to step up? But when you look at all the other moves they made from an offensive standpoint, they got a lot more weapons. So we'll see if the rookie, second-year quarterback, can get it done. I got Oakland number six. I have them getting back into the playoff hunt this year with John Gruden. And getting a healthy Derek Carr, and they have some defensive pieces they can work with too. Tennessee, number seven, Baltimore, eight, Cincinnati, nine, Houston, 10. Depending on Deshaun Watson's health, I think Houston could really move up here too. So I'll just go over those last few really quickly.
I'm sorry, I'm just saying, I agree. The AFC has got don't hold a candle to the NFC. I totally agree with those top four. I probably move Houston up to the top five after Deshaun Watson's comeback, and he with that defense makes them a game changer, and I put them at five. And after that, you know, you could just roll out some teams and maybe try to figure it out at some point. But to me, it's those four, and Houston's my wild card at five. And then after that, I really don't care because I don't really have any confidence. I mean, honestly,
you
know, I just
don't
have any confidence.
They
suck, bro. They are not – I mean, okay. I got those four, and I got Houston at five. And after that, I have no idea, to be honest with you. But I totally agree with your the top four. I probably will put Kansas City at six behind Houston at five, and then seven through ten, whatever. I don't know.
You think the Browns
are going
to make it to the top ten?
Well, hell no.
Wow. at least you kept it straight up honest with us, man, so it's all good.
I'm just saying. I mean, they could maybe – but we're talking about a lot of potential and a whole lot of what ifs. And if the sun shines on this angle on the right day, and this dude sprains his ankle, it's a whole lot of foolishness after that. Like I said, those top five or six. But honestly, the only ones I have confidence, like for real confidence in, are the top three. Just and I include the top three because Jacksonville, because of that defense, to which you talked about. They just have a phenomenal defense. It's going to keep them in every game. You're not going to blow them out. They're going to win some games they probably shouldn't win. They shouldn't win because their offense may not be great, but their defense has played phenomenal and kept them in that. But I love what San Diego was doing, to your point, at the end of last year. And adding Derwin James to that defense, I think, is a really, really big game changer, a steal at that spot. And Deshaun Watson is just a guy. He just is a dude that comes in and can handle his business and he can elevate the team with his play. And you still got that defense. You don't know what you're going to get with J.J. Watt. That's why they're my wild card in that piece of it. But I feel like they have a real solid chance there as well. I like what Kansas City did on the offensive side of the ball against Sammy Watkins. I really feel like if he's healthy and you put everybody in the proper place with Kelsey and I'm forgetting the other wide receiver's name. He's ridiculous. It's just that they have a chance to be really dynamic, almost like that old, you know, the St. Louis Rams kind of offense.
Yeah.
I really think they can have that greatest show kind of turf on offense. They're going to be so ridiculous on offense.
And the only question is Mahomes ready and can Sammy Watkins stay healthy? Those are the only question marks. But the talent is there for sure.
And Tennessee is a wild card because I really feel like they have a sneaky defense. And can Mariota continue? You know what? Real quiet, like, can we talk about it for a quick second? We talk about Andrew Luck, but for me, it's also on Mariota. Like, we keep talking about what he can and can't be and what we think he should be, and he's going to be this awesome quarterback. This year is going to be, it's going to be a real kind of bellwether kind of season for Mariota. Who is he going to be in the NFL? Like, it's time to put up a shut up for him, for me personally. In that Tennessee offense. But I just don't know, so I can't put them up enough. I like the makings of what they have, but I can't say with any kind of certain level of confidence that they're going to be one of those top four or five teams, so I have to put them on the outskirts of it. But I really think it's a three-horse race, to be quite honest with you. I think it's New England.
Gotcha.
I think it's Pittsburgh. I think it's Jacksonville.
There it is.
Yep, the same three.
All right, gentlemen.
Yeah, and there's going to be a team that's going to be a sleeper. We don't know. It could be one of those teams we just mentioned. But there, every year it is that one team that can just. So we know there's going to be someone else in that contention. We just, you know, we just have to wait and see who it is. San Diego could be it. You mentioned KC. You mentioned Tennessee, Houston. Deshaun Watson is just a flat out competitor. And to me, that's just the best way to describe him. He is just going to elevate the play of the rest of his team. If he's fully recovered, you know they're going to be a better ball club. And that's the only question mark. Is he recovered? But if he's healthy, he's going to elevate the play of that ball club, no doubt about it. So it's going to be another team out there for sure that's going to be competing. Derek Carr has the potential to be an elite quarterback. So can John Gruden get them to be consistent? It's going to be someone else.
Yeah, can Jordy Nelson be Jordy Nelson?
Yep. I don't think we're going to get Jordy Nelson of old, but I think he